And joining us on our book club on perspectives today is award-winning author Tammy Hoag. Tammy is a number one international best-selling author of more than 30 books. More than 40 million copies of her books are in print in more than 30 languages. And her latest novel is The Bitter Season. And we'll talk a little bit more about that in just a minute. But first of all, I'd like to take the time to thank you, Tammy, for taking the time out of your busy schedule to be with us.
Oh, thanks for having me.
So tell us a little bit about a lot of people who have read your books, and if they're not familiar with your books, they need to be. I guess some people have called you the queen of suspense, queen of the thriller, and you've gotten some great reviews by people like, oh my gosh, I just forgot her name, Tess Gerritsen. Tess Gerritsen, The Kirkus Review, Sandra Brown, some of the other big names out there, and because you're a big name yourself. So tell us a little bit about, have you always been interested in writing? How did you get started?
Yeah, really, since I was a small child, really. I wrote my first story in third grade. We had to, as a project, we had to write our own short story and illustrate it and make it into a little book. And that was, I was just hooked. I'd already been a reader, you know, since the minute I could put two words together. I loved reading. I loved being read to. And once I found out that I could actually write my own stories, that was it. That was just it.
Is there at a particular point where you decided that a certain genre was for you, not for writing, but reading? Because we all start basically kind of reading the same books as children, Runaway Moon, Goodnight Moon, Runaway Bunny, Dr. Seuss books. But was there a particular time where you decided, I like these books?
Well, you know, I went through different phases like everyone does, I think. I'm a horse person, you know, so I was a horse crazy little girl. So I read everything that had a horse in it. I read all of Walter Fairley and people like that, you know, the Black Stallion books and all of those books. And so for a long time in my childhood, that was what I read. Then when I got into high school, I read all over the place. I read all different kinds of things. And I still do. I still do that. I read all over the place. I don't stick to one genre at all. You know, so when I decided I wanted to try my hand at writing and getting published, at the time I had started reading some romance, and I thought, I think this might be an interesting place to break into, and it wasn't and continues to be a very healthy market, very popular, hot market. And I liked the idea of writing about relationships and how they work and how they don't work and doing that within the construct of a romance. So that was what I was into for a while. And as I felt my way through the process and trying different things within that framework, I started entering using elements of suspense and got more and more into that genre and eventually just crossed over to the dark side altogether.
Tell us, let me first let our listeners know that your latest thriller, Bitter Season, it deals with Detective Nikki Liska and the fact that all of a sudden she is not thrown into because she wants to do the cold case files because that she can spend more time with her family. But then something happens. Well, she misses her old partner, and her old partner all of a sudden gets faced with a case that's just horrific. And I don't want to be the spoiler, but if you wouldn't mind telling us a little bit about what prompted you to do this.
Yeah, well, I wrote a book a couple of years ago called The Ninth Girl, and Sam and Nikki were partners. Sam and Nikki have been partners in homicide for quite a while through, this is now their sixth book for me. And in The Ninth Girl, Nikki came to the conclusion that she really needed to be spending more time with her kids. And homicide is very demanding and erratic. You catch a case and you might be on for 24 hours, 36 hours straight. And it's all consuming, you know, in those bursts of time that you're working that case. And she wanted to spend more time with her kids. And so that prompted me to find another job for her that she could move into the cold case unit and have something more regular hours. And then that poses a new challenge for her old partner, Sam, who doesn't like change and now has to deal with a new partner and moving on that way. You know, their partnership, you know, it's almost like a marriage. They're friends. They know each other. They know how each other thinks. They know, you know, they can finish each other's sentences. They work well together, and now they are both off on their own and having to kind of reconstruct how they do what they do. And Sam and his new partner catch this very brutal and very high-profile double homicide of a college professor and his wife. So his new partner emerged in that while Nikki is investigating a 25-year-old cold case.
And from the very beginning of this book, you see the suspense and the conflict starting because Nikki is at odds with this policeman who came out of retirement, and he insists on looking into a cold case involving his former partner, and it turns kind of political.
Yeah, it's very political, and that's something I like to try to introduce readers to, is that's part of working in the police department. It's not as straightforward as what you might think. You know, there are politics like there are in any kind of office. Gene Grider, this older detective, comes back to the cold case unit, and that's his agenda, is to reopen this homicide of somebody who was a good friend of his back in the day. And the politics of that, he can come back to cold case unit, and he's very attractive to the unit because he'll work for less money because he's retired. He's working on his pension already, so he can kind of use that as a bargaining chip to come back and work that case. He wants them to work the case. He can kind of play up the fact that there is tension in between the city government and the police union and use that as leverage. So I really kind of wanted to show people that this is sometimes how things get decided. The prosecuting attorney who has an eye at running for county attorney is keen to solve something high profile, so he's got free media. And so it's very complicated and tangled. It's not just a straightforward whodunit kind of situation.
We're visiting with New York Times bestselling author Tammy Hoag. Tammy is the author of the recent novel, The Bitter Season, and she's been talking a little bit about the plot, kind of what's been going on with The Bitter Season. It's kind of setting it up because we don't want to spoil it for you, but if you're a fan of Tammy's, this is not going to be a disappointment at all. And if you've never read anything by her, well, then this is going to get you going back to reading some of the other books. And one of the things that I've, because thanks to social media, I think it's helped us as writers, as journalists, instructors, where we can just click on something or ask Google something and it'll come up. And what I have here now is your biography, and it has these seven things that people may not know about you. Is it okay if I go over those?
Oh, sure.
I think this will be fun because I think a lot of people sometimes will put us in a little box and they'll go, well, Louis L'Amour, well, he just writes about Westerns and he wears cowboy clothes all the time and all this stuff. And that's not the case. So the first one is, you once worked as a PI, private investigator.
I was once offered a job by a private investigator.
Okay.
That's absolutely true.
And did you write about that?
I actually have not written about that. I kind of put it in the back of my mind, and then someone brought it up to me recently, and they're like, what was that all about? And I'm like, oh my gosh, you know, I almost just kind of forgot. I hadn't really forgotten about it, but I hadn't thought about it in years. But I had need of the services of a private investigator, and I had contacted this person and said, well, I'll send you everything I have on this subject. But he didn't know who I was. He didn't know anything about me. So I basically wrote a police report. I wrote a timeline. I had all this evidence, and I sent it off to him. And he called me up and said, would you like to have a job? I said, well, thanks, but I already have a job. That's okay. And he's like, oh, did you work in law enforcement? Because this is really, you know, this is very good. And I said, no, you know, only in the books that I write. That's the extent of my experience.
Tammy, you bring up a great point, because when they ask you if you worked in law enforcement, you have to do your research and you have to know everything about law enforcement, about whatever you're writing, because if there is someone out there who is in law enforcement and they read something, they're going, that's not right. That's not the way it's done.
Right. Yeah, that's really important to me. That's really, really important to me. I want to get it right. There is no higher praise for me than to hear from somebody who works on that job and say, you really get it, and you did that right. You did us justice, and that's very important to me. That means so much, and I want to take their experience and try to get people outside of that job to understand what it is that what they do.
So for The Bitter Season, did you work with somebody to find out about cold cases and what they do?
Yeah, I've talked to people who work in cold cases before, and then, of course, now we've got so much information right at our fingertips with being able to do research, you know, on the fly, right as I'm writing. And so I did some extra looking into how cold case units are set up. That was really interesting to me because I think people have this impression that every police department has a cold case unit and that it's staffed by a dozen detectives or more, and that's really not the case. So, you know, in doing the research for this book, I discovered how departments have to apply for grant money, you know, because they're funded by taxpayer dollars and there aren't enough of those to go around. So they'll apply for grants for special units and things like that. So that was part of the research for this book.
We are speaking with Tammy Hogue, New York Times bestselling author. Her latest novel is The Bitter Season. And right now we're discussing with Tammy some of the 7 things that people may not know about her. And most recent was that she was offered a job by a private investigator. And number 2, I'm not surprised that because of your research and because the fact that you were offered a job is that you have a license to carry a concealed weapon.
I do. Yeah, I do. A friend of mine of several years ago decided she was going to take the course because she was good friends with some people who own a gun dealership. And they're like an aunt and uncle to her. And they're like, oh, honey, you need to learn how to carry a gun and everything. And she told me she was going to take this course and I should take it with her. And I thought it would be a valuable experience for me to go through that process and see what that's all about. And so I did go through the course with her. And it was very interesting. I don't actually carry a weapon, but I certainly could. If in the state of Florida, at least I could. And yeah, that was an interesting experience.
And if you were to come visit our campus at the University of Texas at El Paso, the legislature recently passed a law that you can have a concealed weapon on campus.
Wow. I don't have a great feeling about that myself, but
I understand. I mean,
I've lived to this ripe old age and I haven't had to shoot anybody, so I think I'll just carry on that way.
Just on your word processor, correct? That's the way
right.
You eliminate
yes,
people.
Exactly.
Well, number 3 is that your high school guidance counselor encouraged you to become an actress. And we just finished interviewing 2 young ladies who are acting in a play here on campus. And you said that you didn't like that idea because it was too impractical.
I grew up in Minnesota where you have to be very practical about everything. You know, that's kind of the mindset there. And yeah, he said, oh, you should go do summer stock and you should go be an actress. And I thought, well, I'll starve. I also didn't think it was the most practical thing to pursue a career as a fiction writer either. I had to have a job and then work my way into doing it.
Well, one of the things, you know, we see so many reality shows now, America Has Talent, American Idol, and I wouldn't be surprised if we saw one coming up with singing authors, and you used to sing at weddings.
I did, yeah. I grew up, you know, I was a choir kid in school and everything, and yeah, I used to sing at weddings.
You have any of those tapes?
I'm sure they're floating around somewhere. I don't have any, but there probably are a few floating around out there.
Don't be surprised if your agent or somebody comes up with the lost Tammy Hogue tapes.
Oh, my goodness.
like the Beatles or something else. I'll download it on iTunes. It says here, number 5, you have no intention of ever getting married again. You love watching Say Yes to the Dress.
That's true. Isn't that crazy? That sounds like 2 things that don't go together at all. But yeah, I love watching that show because I love when I write, it's all about the psychology of the characters and the dynamics of the relationships. So here's a whole show where you have these family situations put one after the next, and you get to see the dynamics between all these people and while they're trying to agree on one thing. It's fascinating to me.
And you did start out by saying you were interested in romantic novels, so.
Yeah. Well, I made a good living writing all about romance for a long time. But I don't know, somehow murder is more my speed now. That might have to do with why I'm not getting married again.
Well, number 7 is very interesting because it says that when you're stressed out, all tech devices around you go haywire. You've stopped watches. You've fried hard drives, killed a television in the store by merely touching it. It's like, wow.
Yeah. That's a weird phenomenon. And I have actually met other people who have that happen to them. Something about how our personal magnetic fields just get intensified when we're under stress. I was on deadline for a book a few years ago, and my television in my office, it's kind of like my stable pony, you know, it keeps me calm. So I don't know why, but it quit working. That one quit working, and I swear I didn't touch it, but it quit working. And I'm like, oh, my gosh, I have to have a television, like, right this minute because the U.S. Open tennis tournament was on, and I'm a big fan. So I ran out to the nearest big box store, and I was looking at the various TVs, and I walked up to one. And I said, oh, I like this one, and I just touched the frame, and the thing died right before my eyes. I'm like, okay, that's not good. I should probably not touch these things.
That sounds like a good young adult book.
Yeah.
And I'm sure parents would love you for touching iPhones and electronic devices so that they could pay attention to dinner to the kids.
Oh, that could be useful, yeah.
Yeah.
Use my powers for good instead of evil.
We are visiting with New York Times bestselling author Tammy Hoag. She is the author of the recent novel, The Bitter Season. What are the things that people have? I told you earlier we discussed how sometimes people put us in pigeon boxes because we are a certain genre. And so people might wonder a little bit also about your characters and how do you develop them. One of the other, I can't remember if it was Lee Child, no, David Baldacci said that his characters are very real and they exist to him. So what about you?
Yeah, very much so. You know, I always joke that if writers weren't paid for what they do, would be called schizophrenic, you know, because we have these relationships with these imaginary people, and they have their own, you know, they have minds of their own. We, you know, hear their voices very clearly. When I'm writing a scene with, say, Liska and Kovac and their dialogue, I'm in my mind, I'm seeing them and I'm hearing their voices as if I was sitting in a room with them, just hanging out, and I'm just writing down what they say. And so, yeah, the characters become very real, very attached to them and involved, and they become a part of who you are.
And do people perhaps urge you, whether it be fans or your friends or family, to do something to your characters? Like, perhaps this person should get married, or I think these two do this.
Yes, definitely. That happens all the time. When is Nikki going to get a boyfriend? You know, will Sam ever find happiness? Why don't you kill Nikki's ex-husband? You know, stuff like that. Then that's a great compliment, really. That is such a great compliment when readers, they want to know what happens next with the characters. You know, in their minds, these characters live on beyond the pages of that particular book, and that's the best compliment.
Tell me a little bit about, you mentioned at the beginning that you love to read. You still enjoy reading as I do as well. And I like listening to audiobooks because they've become very dramatized now, not just somebody reading. So when Tammy Hoag sits down to read, what do you like to read? Let's say if you're taking a trip somewhere.
I'm sure you hear this all the time. Writers don't get as much time to read as they would like. I don't get enough time to read for pleasure. So when I do, I'll read kind of all over the place. I won't stick with one particular author. I won't stick with one particular genre because I want to have a sampling of kind of everything. I want the smorgasbord. So I might read one suspense novel, then I'll read something. I might read women's fiction. I might read something completely different. I might read a fantasy novel. It just, whatever kind of grabs me in the moment. And I like that. I like kind of getting outside of what I do. Because, you know, it's hard. When I pick up something from my own genre, I'm automatically kind of on the job. Why did the writer do this? Why didn't they shadow this way? You know, it's hard not to read it as a writer and to look at it as, well, I would have done this differently or whatever. So to go outside the genre where I have no expertise and I can just be an observer, that's always a fun break.
And there always has been great female authors, but it seems like recently a lot more authors are writing suspense and thriller, female authors I'm talking about. And you have people like Lisa Scottolini, Jodi Picoult, Hannah, I forgot her name. It'll come to me, and she's probably going to call me after this and go, what about me? Sandra Brown,
yeah.
Tess Gerritsen, and I don't know about if you have children or not, but I know Tess told us when we were speaking with her that her sons are just like, Mom, you just are too creepy. You know, we don't like what you're writing.
That's pretty funny. I do get those sideways looks from people who they will have read what I write, and then they meet me and then they're like, but you seem so nice. Like, clearly you're not.
And people, one of the probably seven things on there is that you have an incredible sense of humor as well, and some good things that could come out, perhaps Tammy Hoag's suspense novel joke book or something.
Yeah, really? Well, I always do try to include some humor. You know, I mean, you need to have the whole range of emotion, I think. And part of being on the job as a police officer is they have a very dark sense of humor, and it's very necessary to them to have that pressure valve release to get rid of some of the pressure of what they do. And so they have this kind of dark and raw sense of humor. So I always try to include some of that.
As you mentioned, that one of my classes that I teach here is radio and television programming, and we've been going over radio dramas, and I played today some Broadway Is My Beat, which is one of my favorite police detective radio shows of the 50s, 40s, and 50s, and when one of them makes a joke, the other guy says, you find that funny? And it's like, oh, sorry, okay. But I think, as you mentioned, you know, that there's a lot of stress, and something may be funny, but because they're so stressed out, they get upset.
Yeah, well, usually cops get each other, you know, and what really goes awry is when somebody outside of their realm hears them making a joke that seems wildly inappropriate for the, maybe they're on the death scene, maybe they're in the middle of something that's really horrible and grisly, but they have to find a way to make a little distance, emotional distance, and it seems wildly inappropriate to somebody who's not on the job, but the people who work the job usually, you know, they get that.
I understand. Tammy, we're running out of time here, so if you wouldn't mind sharing with us perhaps your Facebook page or where people can go to find out more information about your books and about you?
Sure. Website is www.tammyhoag.com. Facebook page is the same, Facebook/Tammy Hoag. I'm easy to find, pretty easy to find.
And easy to make laugh.
Yes.
Thank you.
Thank you.
We've had a great time with you, Tammy. Thank you so much. We've been visiting with New York Times bestselling author Tammy Hoag. Her latest novel is The Bitter Season. Tammy, thanks for being with us.
Thanks for having me.
Perspectives is taped and produced at the KTEP Studios, University of Texas at El Paso Communication Building. Our thanks to our engineer, Evan Walsh. Our producer is Dennis Wu. You've been tuned to Perspectives. I'm Louis Sines.